take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Rough Belleville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belleville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Wednesday, December 3rd, 2014, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thank you for joining us here for one of our last shows of 2014. I can't believe it's December already. And guess what? Tomorrow, December 4th, marks the 30-day mark after we legalize marijuana here in the state of Oregon. And that means that the state can begin its process of setting up the regulations. We're going to talk a little bit about that in Behind the Headlines today because, you know, a lot of people ask me throughout my career with Normal, what are you going to do once it's legalized? You're going to work yourself out of a job. Not true, folks. I'm telling you, with legalization comes more work. It's a long way from legalization to equalization, and we are far from being equals to beer drinkers, pill poppers, and cigarette smokers. So there's plenty to do, and in Behind the Headlines, we're going to take a look at some of the regulatory questions that OLCC, the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, is going to have to work on starting tomorrow and working all the way through 2015. They have to be ready to start accepting license applications January 4th, 2016. This year coming up, 2015, is going to be very important for us to get active and to make sure that our voices are heard as consumers. There's going to be a lot of lobbyists there for the marijuana businesses, for the marijuana growers, but somebody needs to speak up for the consumers. I'll be here doing that for you as much as I can. So stay tuned. Behind the Headlines, we'll talk all about that. Also on the show today in the drug war data mine, you've probably already heard the crushing news that the Staten Island grand jury refused to indict the police officer who choked to death an African-American man on videotape, of all things. The coroner ruled it a homicide, but the cop will not have to stand trial. And that prompts me to take a look today at the FBI's Law Enforcement Officers Killed and Assaulted database. It's called LEOCA. And we're going to take a look at just how dangerous it is to be a police officer to figure out maybe why they need to be killing so many unarmed people. Also on the show today, we've got two great guests joining us. At half past, it's our Hemp Day Hump Day update with Too High to Fail author Doug Fine. He's also the author of Hemp Bound. He's going to get us the latest updates in the hemp industry all across this country and around the world. And then at 45 after, we're going to do a Cannabusiness Chronicle. We're visiting with Roselda Neufville with the Bay Area's High Def Transit. It's an interesting concept of ferrying people around the Bay Area. Those of us who are, shall we say, 420 friendly. We'll talk to her about that and find out what the business plan is in our Cannabusiness Chronicles. But first, we'll start things off with the 420 radio news. And in the news today, the headlines, the House Republicans are trying to block Washington, D.C.'s marijuana legalization initiative. Surprise, surprise. More than 400 medical marijuana dispensaries have been closed in the Los Angeles area. We'll tell you why. We've got a look at Illinois and how 221 applicants are vying for 60 medical marijuana licenses. We got a friend of ours out in Massachusetts who's opening up a CBD store and doesn't care if it's legal or not. And we take a look back at the coastal nation of Chile down there in South America, where a new TV show is seeking to end the stigma about marijuana consumption and cultivation. All that's coming up in hour one of the Russ Belleville Show, and then stay tuned for hour two, Toker Talk Radio. We got Bacon Dan in the studio today. We're going to hear some music from Gordon Green in our Irie Wednesday, and we'll talk all about what's happening throughout the world of legalization, medicalization, decriminalization, and eventually equalization. Stay tuned. The news is next.
Russ Belleville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio, your ticket to the Boston Freedom Rally.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson, or Norman. And I smoke pot and I like it a lot. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer than alcohol. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting those who smoke marijuana responsibly. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at NORML.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL.
Hemp Radio with Patty Cakes from Orange County, California, replaying Wednesdays at 10 Pacific on 420radio.org. Five of the last nine major party candidates to run for president, three of the last nine vice presidential candidates, and the last three two-term presidents have all smoked pot. Marijuana, the gateway drug to the White House. This is the Russ Belville Show. It's time for the 420 Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Transcripts of 420 Radio News are available daily on our website at 420radio.org. Now, here's Russ Belville with your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds. This is your 420 Radio News for Wednesday, December 3rd, 2014. House Republicans are fighting to roll back the District of Columbia's recently passed marijuana legalization initiative. Republicans are insisting on including a provision in an omnibus spending bill that would ban the district from using local funds to carry out the legalization measure, which was passed overwhelmingly by ballot initiative in November. House Appropriations Committee Chairman Harold Rogers has been a vehement opponent to relaxing drug laws, animated by the spread of methamphetamine and prescription drug use in his home state of Kentucky. The White House said in a policy statement released after the House passed the Financial Services and General Government bill that it, quote, strongly opposes, end quote, any efforts to direct how the district enforces its laws. But if Republicans make the proposal central to their demands, it remains uncertain how hard Democrats will fight to keep it from becoming law. More than 400 medical marijuana dispensaries in the city of Los Angeles have been closed, and Los Angeles City Attorney Mike Foyer says he is now taking aim against the creator of a pot delivery app. Officials say the Los Angeles City Attorney's Office has filed more than 200 criminal cases against 743 defendants, including both dispensary operators and property owners, effectively closing 402 medical marijuana dispensaries in the 17 months since Foyer took office. NestDrop, an application also used for alcohol deliveries, announced in October that it planned to expand into medical marijuana delivery. That started in mid-November, Foyer said. Foyer wants a superior court judge to issue a cease and desist order that would stop NestDrop from delivering pot, contending that it is doing business unlawfully and circumventing Proposition D, which limited the number of medical pot dispensaries in the city. The clock is ticking on the state's first decisions concerning the licensing of medical marijuana in Illinois. Only licensed physicians can write a recommendation for medical marijuana, and under terms of the Illinois law, any pot must be consumed in the patient's home. A total of 60 dispensaries will be licensed to fill recommendations statewide. So far, 211 have applied. It isn't clear how many dispensaries will be located in the city of Chicago. Applicants who are granted a dispensary license face what the state hopes are airtight regulations. No building can be located within 1,000 feet of a school or daycare center. All must be outfitted with high-tech security systems to protect not only the pot, but what is expected to be large volumes of cash. Some 8,000 patients have already applied for marijuana cards in Illinois. Bill Downing isn't sure whether the medical cannabis products he sells at his Boston store are legal. He also said he doesn't care whether they are or not. Downing operates CBD Please in the Alston neighborhood of Boston. Through his Lincoln Street store, he sells medical marijuana that he believes is legal because it is made from hemp oil. But the Department of Public Health forced Downing to shut down a previous store, and the Boston Police Department told WBZ News Radio 1030's Lana Jones that it is, quote, looking into the legality, end quote, of the newest operation. Downing, meanwhile, argues that cannabidiol, or CBD, is the medically active ingredient in hemp, and it is not an intoxicant. He does not have a medical marijuana license. Marijuana products at Downing's store include roll-on and rub-on salves, sprays, capsules, and scalp and hair care items. According to Downing, the items do not have THC, which is the intoxicating ingredient in marijuana. As efforts to decriminalize marijuana use make significant gains in Latin American countries, a new TV channel in Chile is now making an attempt to win the hearts and minds of the public at large. It's called Cultiva TV, and the people behind it want to dispel misinformation about marijuana consumption and educate Chileans about the medicinal, cultural, and spiritual properties of getting high. Although public opinion has rallied in favor of its medicinal uses, people in Chile, including politicians, fear that legalizing medicinal marijuana will cause an increase in its illegal recreational use. Small gains, however, have been made. Last September, Chilean authorities approved the first legal medical marijuana farm, and earlier this year, a Chilean cancer and lupus patient was granted special permission to take a cannabis-derived painkiller known as Sativex. Laws regulating drugs in Chile do not penalize personal cannabis use in a private setting, although they do outlaw growing the plant. This has been your 420 Radio News for Wednesday, December 3rd, 2014. I'm Russ Belville. 420 Radio, freeing your mind 24 hours a day.
There's so much I worry about as a mom. Stephen Harper thinks that organized crime should continue to profit from marijuana prohibition. Imagine regulating marijuana like alcohol and cigarettes with a strong and clear educational message, making it more difficult for my kids and your kids to access. Drug dealers don't ask for ID. Stephen Harper does not have the kind of judgment we need to protect our children, authorized by the Normal Women's Alliance of Canada.
Tokers, there's no good reason to get your dog stoned. While it might not harm them physically, imagine being a dog who already begs for treats all day, and then imagine that dog having the munchies. Not cool.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
The Russ Belville Show reminds you to never smoke and drive impaired. Hang out for a while. Share.
Welcome back, everybody. 12, almost 13 after the hour here at Rolla J Studios, and we go behind the headlines here in the state of Oregon, where we have passed marijuana legalization, and now it's time to start working on the regulations. And with respect to that, lawmakers next week in Salem will consider a $583,000 funding request for the OLCC, the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. Now, part of this, $333,000, is to pay for four positions. They want to hire a program manager, two policy analysts, and a public affairs staffer. Also, the chief financial office recommended they add another $250,000 to that request, $250,000, to deal with travel expenses and to pay for legal advice from the Oregon Department of Justice. So there's some new good government jobs in Oregon if you want to start applying for them. I think what they said for the program manager, the salary range for the program manager is $7,000 to $10,000 a month. The policy analyst will be paid between $5,000 and $7,700 a month, and the public affairs specialist salary will be between $5,000 and $7,000 a month. Shit, what am I doing here? I'm out of here. No. I'm just kidding. But man, that's some pretty good pay there at the state government, OLCC, to be able to make marijuana regulations. Roscoe's pretty excited about it, too. Now, once we implement the marijuana program, they're expecting OLCC to field about 30 employees and have a budget of about $6.4 million per biennium. Now, here in Oregon, we do an every 2 year kind of legislative thing. So that's about, what, $3.2 million a year to staff this and run this. So they can't complain that we're not giving them enough resources to get the job done. The fiscal analyst, her name is Michelle Deister, and she came up with some issues that the state is going to have to address. And these are some things that we need to think about as activists and think about as marijuana consumers as to how we want to shape these regulations. Here's some of the things they're going to look at. They want to know where marijuana production, processing, and retail facilities will be located. Now, that brings up an interesting graph that I'd like to show y'all that I developed earlier today, and it has to do with where you can actually get where you can actually grow marijuana once it becomes legal here in the state. A lot of people understand that we've got the four plants per residence that you're going to be able to grow. But what they don't understand is that the laws against growing marijuana as far as within 1,000 feet of a school will still be in effect, even for recreational grows. And that's a little bit troublesome when you take a look at a city like Portland, where 1,000 feet of a school is that. This is a map of Portland, Oregon, and I've put my location, Rolla J Studios, just about darn near in the middle of that map. Kind of hard to tell. You can see the major freeways running east and west. That's I-84, and then the one running north and south, that's I-205. And then there's the river on the left where downtown Portland is. Every one of those blue circles is the footprint of a school, and the purple around it is the 1,000 feet around that school. So as you can see, when you live in a major city like Portland, Oregon, you're almost guaranteed to be living within 1,000 feet of a school if you're in a residential district. If they're going to use those 1,000 feet rules with respect to marijuana licensees, it's going to severely impact where these places can be located. They also need to worry about how marijuana is going to be moved from the wholesale to the retail market. We're doing something that's not been done in marijuana markets before. Washington State has producer, processor, retailer licenses. We have, and so does Colorado, we have producer, processor, wholesaler, and retailer licenses. You'll be able to grow your own, supply it to your own dispensary, and supply it to other dispensaries. And so that opens up a whole bunch of regulatory questions that are going to have to be addressed. We also need to address the big elephant in the room, and that is, are we going to have two parallel distribution systems for marijuana, one for medical, one for recreational? Or are we going to do something to try to fold those together and eliminate redundancies? It seems odd to me that we would have medical marijuana shops that are under one set of regulations and one set of testing guidelines, and then reinvent the wheel for recreational when they are pretty much selling the same product. Now, I understand there's argument for higher CBD products for medical patients and maybe higher THC products for recreational. But I think that one pot shop and one supply chain can handle that marketing. I don't think we really need to have redundancies in this system. We also have to address how to track the marijuana to determine taxes and prevent leakage to the illicit market, as they like to put it. What sort of seed to sale tracking is Oregon going to employ? We also need to answer the question of how to handle inspections and auditing. That'll be a part of the process. So at what time can the state audit? When can they come inspect? Is it no announcement, random inspections, or do we get a warning in these sort of things? These are little details that are going to have to be worked out. Also, the testing part is definitely something we need to pay strict attention to, because the quality of what we sell through the recreational shops is going to set a standard that's going to affect legalization in other states as we move toward 2016. We want people to point to Oregon as the shining star, the gold standard for marijuana legalization. So we got to ensure that our consumers are getting the best possible products. We also have to track financial reports, licensee data, inspections, applications, background checks, taxes, all of these areas that are impacted by marijuana legalization. Now, according to Rob Patridge, who is both the chairman of this liquor control commission, and the Klamath County District Attorney who opposed legalization. According to Rob Patridge, he says that the commission is going to be traveling throughout the state all throughout 2015 to hold a series of public meetings on what the new program should look like. Those meetings have not yet been scheduled, but as soon as they are, you can bet 420 Radio and the Russ Belville Show will make you aware of it, and we will attend as many of them as we can and bring you live streaming information from all of them. We are definitely going to hold them accountable to legalizing marijuana in the way the voters intended when they passed this legalization with the greatest amount of votes ever.
Maybe we should start at 420, right? Marijuana reference!
Okay, not the most votes ever, I should say the greatest rate of support ever. Oregon legalization passed with 56.1% of the vote. Washington was 55.7, Colorado was 55.3, and Alaska was 52.1. So we win something. Maybe a toke. Because it is 20 after. Let's take a break. We'll be back with Drug War Data Mining.
420 Radio, your ticket to Seattle Hemp Fest. Get .buzz. .buzz is the internet platform that fuels community interest, excitement, and new experiences. .buzz is the premier online destination for internet users seeking the latest news on a variety of topics. .buzz appeals to groups active in blogging, communications, journalism, advertising, and marketing. .buzz offers registrants a stronger alternative to the shrinking namespace of existing top-level domain names, such as .com, .net, and .org. Get your name now at get.buzz. You can find information for all our 420radio.org shows by visiting the control panel at the top of 420radio.org. Click schedule to find out the latest times for your shows in your time zone. Click show guide to learn more about each show. Thanks for supporting 420radio.org. Hey, tokers and tokettes, Radical Russ here for the Canador, a practical solution to keep herbs from drying. The Canador is the perfect airtight storage system for your fine herbs. From the half-inch thick walnut and cherry wood construction, clear-top perforated jars for storage, and the humidity bead system that keeps your herbs at a perfect 65% relative humidity. I keep all my herbs in the Canador, and you should too. Check out Canador.com for more information. Arguing for the end of adult marijuana prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It is even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more in this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
Welcome back, everyone. 22 and a half after the hour. And today, as I was readying the show, my Twitter feed alerted me to the breaking news that there would be no indictment in the case of Eric Garner, a 44-year-old African-American man who was choked to death on camera by an NYPD officer. No indictment, even though the medical examiner ruled Eric Garner's death a homicide. No indictment, even though the NYPD has declared chokeholds at a forbidden technique to use in controlling a suspect. No indictment, despite the fact this was caught on videotape. And for all of us that have been chanting most recently about getting cameras on the cops, you know, the body cameras that President Obama said they'd spend $50 million on, might as well save the money, because apparently even if you have it on camera, a grand jury is not going to indict a police officer. And to me, this just illustrates a fundamental flaw in our justice system, where we expect prosecutors to bring charges against cops. They're on the same team, folks. They're on the same team. If a prosecutor gets the gets the reputation as being someone who's going to charge cops, that prosecutor finds out later that those cops don't cooperate with him so much when it comes to prosecuting other crimes. This is something we examined in the past when we talk about how, everybody talks about, oh, it's a few bad cops. There's a bunch of good cops. Well, why don't the good cops ever speak up? It's because the good cops can get killed for speaking up. They get shot in the back by their fellow cops. They can be left alone to be killed by perpetrators when they call for backup, and for some reason their cop buddies never show up. Once you get marked as a snitch in the cop culture, your cop career is pretty much over. But for drug war data mining today, I decided I would take a look. Since there have been so many killings by police officers against unarmed civilians lately, that we ought to take a look at just how dangerous it is to be a police officer. Maybe these guys are just in fear for their lives. There is a database that keeps track of this information. It's the FBI's Uniform Crime Report, and it is something that's known as LEOCA, Law Enforcement Officers Killed and Assaulted, LEOCA. And this will break down into four different categories: the officers feloniously killed, officers accidentally killed, officers assaulted, and federal officers killed and assaulted. Taking a look at feloniously killed, this would be where, you know, the alleged Michael Brown charging the cop to try to kill him scenario, right? How often has that happened to police officers in America? According to LEOCA, officers feloniously killed, in 2013, 27 law enforcement officers died from injuries incurred in the line of duty during felonious incidents. 27 deaths. Now, if we add in the officers who were accidentally killed, there were another 49 law enforcement officers who died in accidents. They got in a car wreck in their cop car. They fell off of a ledge while trying to get a suicide suspect. Whatever it might have been, another 49 died. That means that in 2013, we had the fewest number of police deaths in the past decade. The fewest number of police deaths in a decade, looking at that data. And comparing police officers' rate of death, we can get information from the Bureau of Justice. Bureau of Labor Statistics. My bad. That tell us what is the rate of death for common employment occupations. Police officers were killed at a rate of 14.24 per 100,000 police officers. That doesn't even make the top 10, folks. That doesn't even make the top 10. When you look at the top three, it's pilots, 50 pilots per 100,000, fishermen, 117 per 100,000, and loggers, 127 per 100,000. In fact, the rate of fishermen and logger deaths exceeds the total number of police deaths in 2012. And of course, the most important number, there is no good statistical tracking of this particular number. Unfortunately, there is no database that tracks this information. But from FBI estimates, over 400 civilians have been killed by police officers in 2013. Over 400. And that's a constant number that's been going on for the past few years. Enough is enough. This must end.
420 Radio, your ticket to the High Times Cannabis Cups. Are you a hypocrite? If you live a closeted cannabis lifestyle, you are. Read about seven people living a closeted cannabis lifestyle who are on the verge of coming out in The Hypocrites by Mara K. Eaton. Available at areyouahypocrite.net. You can purchase the book on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, also available on iTunes. Check out Mara K. Eaton on Facebook as well. Learn more at areyouahypocrite.net.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
Growing plants indoors can be a rewarding hobby, but electricity bills can go through the roof. Then you have to cool down all those big hot lights. It can drive a grower insane. With Lush LED lighting, you can solve many of these issues and double your rewards. Matt and his scientists have developed the perfect light for flowering plants with far less cost and heat. And the results? Very effective. Check out LushLEDLighting.com right now and tell them Radical Russ sent you.
marijuana legalization also ushers in the return of the American hemp industry. Get the latest news from the author of Hemp Bound and Too High to Fail, Doug Fine, in our Hemp Day Hump Day update.
All right, welcome back, everybody. We're going to get Doug Fine on the line here for us. And me, I didn't pull up his phone number in advance. So let me see if I can get this going here. Speaking to Doug Fine, I'm looking through all of my contacts and not finding his number. And I know we've had him on the show just recently. So bear with me for a moment. I'll get this figured out. And we'll be right back in just a second. In the meantime, enjoy some Slightly Stupid.
And everybody wants to get some. You know that is better to smoke it. Sit in the morning, time. And when you wake, you bake, you know that everything will be just fine, so fine. You know that it is better to smoke that shit. Sit in the morning, time. And when you wake, you bake, you know that everything will be just fine, so fine. But everybody wants to get some. And everybody wants to get some. And everybody wants to get some. And everybody wants to get some. But I'm gonna call the doctor for me. But yes, this is a case of emergencies. Cause me and Kyle smoke sensi long time ready. But if you got another split board, then pass it over to me. I'll be able to say no. But everybody wants to get some. And everybody wants to get some. And everybody wants to get some.
Legalization also ushers in the return of the American hemp industry. Get the latest news from the author of Hemp Bound and Too High to Fail, Doug Fine, in our Hemp Day Hump Day update.
All right, take two on Hemp Day Hump Day. I finally found the phone number. We got Doug Fine on the line. Doug, how are you doing?
I am thrilled to be here with you. I love that intro. It's got me fired up.
Thanks so much, man. Doug Fine, of course, is the author of Too High to Fail and Hemp Bound, and every other Wednesday he joins us to tell us the latest in the hemp movement. So, Doug, what are you up to lately, and what's the latest?
There is so much going on. Can you hear me clearly?
Yeah, we got
By
you.
By the way, okay, great. I don't know if I mentioned this during our last Hump Day Hemp Day, but my own state, finally, of New Mexico, we're moving a bit. I gave a two-day hemp workshop in Santa Fe, the state capital, and there were political players connected, and we have a very GOP-slanted state government right now. And as we've learned in Kentucky, that doesn't necessarily mean bad news for hemp. So we're having to strategize a bit how to do it, but I've drafted the legislation, and a whole team of people are pounding the hallways of our state roundhouse, and I'm hoping my state might be the 20th. Today, to permit hemp cultivation in accordance with the big change last February in the federal farm bill that permits hemp cultivation for research purposes. But that's being interpreted very broadly in places like Colorado and Kentucky and Vermont. And Oregon just today issued its state draft recommendations for how to start its hemp program so its hemp farmers can plant in the spring. And oh my gosh, Russ, I'm sure you feel this every day, but dreams becoming reality. on the hemp cannabis front.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, when I think of the possibilities for hemp industries in Oregon, you know, I'm always reminded when I drive back to Idaho to visit my folks, I drive that I-84 freeway. It's on the northern border of Oregon. And there's a particular spot once you get off of the gorge and off of the river there where you're in this long stretch of strait. And there's this series of well-spaced and organized trees that are there for the paper industry. These big rows of trees that you can just look down row after row after row. And I can't wait to look down I-84 the next time and be able to see row after row of hemp fields out there, taking the place of those paper trees.
It's what you're describing sounds like the cover photo on Hemp Bound, the book. It's just, you know, let's put it this way. If amber waves of genetically modified grain change over to waving hands of industrial cannabis, we solved our energy, domestic energy issue, because there's our energy from gasification of the fiber right there. And, of course, the profit to farmers in the ground is coming from the seed oil industry. Since we last spoke, last week, in fact, I was at the Canadian Hemp Trade Alliance. Talk about an intimidating gig. They had me giving the keynote speech in front of farmers that are growing like 8,000 acres of hemp, 3,000 acres. I mean, people that are up to their shoulders really doing this thing, and it's growing 24% per year in Canada. They can't keep up with the acreage for demand. It's passing $1 billion in value, the overall Canadian market this year, and just from seed and seed oil products. And the reason why it's growing so fast is that the world is discovering the health values of the hemp plants. One of the talks that was given at that Canadian Hemp Trade Alliance convention was a University of Manitoba food researcher who broke it down. We all heard, oh, it's good for you, omega balance. He showed you. Hemp with every other oil, from olive oil to nut oils like walnut oil, flax oil, all of it. And there it was, that perfect 3-to-1 omega-6, omega-3 balance, including a kind of omega-6 called GLA that's crucial in formation of cell walls in our immune system, that is basically only in significant quantities in hemp oil. So it truly is a superfood, and the farmers in the ground in Canada are making five times what they were making from the GMO cycle crops prior to that. So it's to their advantage to switch over, and to American farmers' advantages too. And of course, that includes Oregon starting this year.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned that they're primarily concentrated on seed oil crop and the nutritional uses of hemp seed. Are they ignoring the textile uses, the building material uses, or they're just not profitable yet?
They're ignoring the fiber uses to their detriment, and they know it. In fact, the punchline for my keynote, like the recurring joke, was that I'm trying to prod you Canadians to start doing something with your fiber. They're burning it in the field because it's such a strong... We all know, those of us who have read Jack Lehrer and all of it know how strong the hemp fiber is, and... it's because they aren't taking the time to market the fiber. They're only doing the seed oil. They're not even bothering to churn it under and bury it because it's such a strong fiber that it's damaging their harvesters. So they're just burning it in the field, which is not good. They know it's not good, like from the podium and during the fiber talks and all the politically connected hemp farmers, they all admit it. They know. The funny thing about it, and I found this when I was researching Hemp Bound, it's the opposite in Europe. In Europe, they're being dragged kicking and screaming into the oil market because they just have done fiber forever. They know fiber. My hemp shirt today is made from European hemp fiber. They know fiber. Before I forget, Russ, one of the really interesting developments, and we may have touched on this last time, is a fiber application that is already taking hold in the U.S. It's based on a recent study, and I met the researcher at this Canadian Hemp Trade Alliance. His name is Ji Lee, and he was part of a team that discovered that for next generation batteries, this nanotechnology stuff that's very up to now had been very environmentally unfriendly to produce and very expensive to produce, but it produces these things called supercapacitors, which are going to, in the next generation batteries, allow us to charge all our homes in 10 minutes, our cars in 5 minutes, and our phones in a matter of seconds. It turns out that when you hammer hemp into one atom-thick carbon wafers, the shape of the hemp molecule, results in slightly better performance than what had been used at 1/1000th of the cost and no toxicity, of course, because it's hemp. So that's thrilling enough, right? Mm. But already farmers in the U.S., a Colorado farmer I met named Jim Bremer, is selling his harvest this year. Seed harvest is why he grew, but what's he doing with the fiber? He's selling it to a local Colorado high-tech company who wants to use the fiber for research in next-generation environmentally sustainable batteries. So we are in excited, you know, as parent, I feel like we're in exciting times and humanity's got a real shot.
Yeah, it seems like it's coalescing at the right time. People are becoming more aware of the damage to the environment, to the climate. They're becoming aware that they can't just waste fossil fuels like they used to. And at the same time that awareness is happening, these technological innovations are happening with the hemp plant that provide the answer that we're looking for. Do you have a problem sometimes, though, of people thinking it's too good to be true?
Only myself, like only in trying to, because I'm a cynical journalist with 20 years experience at this point, Russ. And so it's my job to be skeptical, rigorous when I investigate a new topic. And 5 years of field research is showing that my roommate with a lava lamp that was ranting about hemp didn't even go far enough.
Yeah.
It's better than we thought.
That's amazing. Doug Fine is, of course, the author of this fantastic book, Hemp Bound, Dispatches from the Front Lines of the Next Agricultural Revolution, and the New York Times bestseller, Too High to Fail. Where are you headed next, Doug? What's up next for you?
A busy December. The Emerald Cup in Northern California. I'll be talking hemp. Showing some of my slides from the harvest, legal harvest, sorry for the back off noise here, it's beautiful village in Africa. Birthplace of Billy the Kid, by the way. So at the Emerald Cup, I'll be showing some of the slides from Slovenian hemp harvest, Kentucky hemp harvest, all part of a hemp printed first legal modern hemp harvest document that I'm putting together along with Morris Beagle of Colorado Hemp Company, partly on American-grown hemp in the spring. So I'll be showing some of those slides, and then I'll be on a panel as well with the legendary Native American hemp activist John Trudell, and we'll be talking hemp and taking hemp questions there in Sonoma. I think that's December 14th. Then I'm going 2 days to Oregon, hopefully I can cross paths with you there, and talking to the state about implementation of hemp and how to best do it. I really want to be involved in that because I care a lot about Oregon. And then off to Düsseldorf, Germany, where a nice, well-established hemp company called HempPro wants me to come and give a hemp-bound talk on, especially on the American situation, to their company holiday party. So, heck, free trip to Germany, whatever, I'll take it.
Hey, sounds like a good trip, man. All right, well, when you get to Oregon, let me know. We'll hook up, get you in the studio perhaps, and we always look forward to the Hemp Day Hump Day update. 2 weeks from now, we'll hear about Emerald Cup and everything else that's going on in your life. Doug Fine, thanks so much for joining us here and being a part of the show.
Are you kidding? It's an honor. One of the best journalists out there, Les Belville. Not just in this topic of cannabis, but you'd be a top-notch journalist in whatever field you focus on.
Thank you, man.
Thanks for having me.
I appreciate that. All right. Well, stay tuned, folks. When we come back, we've got the anti-drug public service announcement of the day, and then we're joined with Roselda Neufville from High Def Transit, an interesting business opportunity happening in the Bay Area. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio, turning red states and blue states green.
You know Herb Thrasher from the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour. Now get ready for Herb Age Designs for the proud cannabis consumer. Herb Age Designs, lifestyle gear for the 420 friendly. Herb Age Designs, we've got frisbee golf discs and durable hemp gear. Herb Age Designs, we've got shot glasses, drinking glasses, coffee mugs, and beer cozies. Check us out on Facebook and online at herbagedesigns.com. And follow Herb Age and Herb Thrasher on Twitter.
In the
interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Russ Belville Show presents the anti-drug public service announcement of the day.
I helped murder families in Colombia.
It was just innocent fun.
I helped kidnap people's dads.
Hey, some harmless fun.
I help kids learn how to kill.
I was just having some fun, you know.
I helped kill policemen.
I was just having fun.
I helped the bomber get a fake passport.
All the kids do it.
I helped kill a judge.
I helped blow up buildings.
My life, my body.
It's not like I was hurting anybody else.
This has been the anti-drug public service announcement of the day. To cure this sort of reefer madness, listen to the Russ Belville Show every weekday on 420radio.org. Adam Hand of Handmade Apparel produces quality custom designs for t-shirts, hats, and other apparel. Handmade Apparel is the official design shop for 420 Radio, among many clients who rely on Adam Hand for everything from short-run custom projects to full-run clothing lines. Visit handmadeapparel.biz to browse the selection of handmade gear or to get a personal quote for your own designs. Handmade Apparel, a proud supporter of 420radio.org. Mark Twain once said that when there's a gold rush, it's a good time to be in the pick and shovel business. Today, we look at the rapidly evolving markets in the marijuana green rush in our Canna Business Chronicles.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Just about 46 after the hour, and joining us via Skype, we've got Roselda Neufville from High Def Transit out there in San Francisco, California. I don't know if we're connected or not, but can you hear me, Roselda?
I sure can. Can you hear me?
Yes, yes. You're coming in loud and clear. Before we start the interview and talk about High Def Transit, we've got a little video here from High Def Transit that we can show, give people maybe a little thumbnail sketch of what's going on, and then we'll go back to Roselda on the line to talk more about this business. But check this commercial out first. High Def Transit from San Francisco, California.
With over a billion people in the world, chances are there's somebody out there just like you. There are software engineers, pastry chefs, artists, and people with medical conditions. And what do many of these people have in common? They use marijuana. It's expected that marijuana will be legalized in California. And when that happens, what will be the biggest concern? Safety. That's where we come in. High Def Transit is a discreet shuttle service that also serves as a mobile vapor room. Members can medicate on board while our certified drivers get you to your destination safely so you can enjoy the ride. So hop in, make friends, and ride safe. High Def Transit.
All right. So I'm really excited about this, Roselda, because to me, it sounds like Uber with a Duber. Am I close?
You can definitely say something like that.
So High Def Transit, now you're starting off in the Bay Area, and is that just kind of going to be like a test market, or is that just the first one you're getting into?
Yes, that's more of a test market. As you know, with anything in business, you want to kind of start small, especially since this is something that's very, very new in the San Francisco market. You know, we want to take time, connect with our members, actually, you know, build a relationship with them, kind of listen to some of the things that they want to see aboard our buses. What we're offering is, for the first time in California, is a place where working class professionals can actually take time out of their busy schedule after work or so, come aboard our buses and actually medicate. So it's a really, really new concept, and anything, you know, that's new and stuff takes time.
So how would someone get a ride? Would they have to subscribe on a monthly basis? Is it like an Uber where I can just use an app and get picked up? I mean, how does this work?
In the future, we definitely want to go towards the app. At the moment, it is a membership-based service. So in California, we only have medical marijuana. So you do have to be a patient. We have an annual fee. We are still in the works of kind of concreting that fee, as well as a monthly membership. And so it's a reservation service. We are definitely aware that with a lot of working class professionals, discretion is absolutely key. So we would, so you would reserve a time slot aboard the bus. We would pick you up in a unmarked bus and have all the fun that you could possibly have on the inside.
Well, very nice. Okay, so it sounds almost like, you know, I fly a lot for the work that I do, and there's a mm-hmm. thing called Super Shuttle. You can call the Super Shuttle when you get off at the airport, and it'll take you to the downtown core where the hotels are. Mm-hmm. Is that kind of the idea here, where it's going to be around a specific time of day and specific locations, or what are the hours of operation going to be?
So with the hours of operations, we are... we're planning on off-peak and on-peak hours. On-peak hours are commute hours. So we are basing it around people who work on a 9-to-5 schedule. But, you know, there's a lot of variations around here in San Francisco. The commute hours starts around 3 o'clock, between 3 to 7. So those are our on-peak hours. So with that, it'll be a little bit more strategized where you would... where basically it's the first come, first serve type of basis mm-hmm. and such. But we are, however, one thing that differentiates us from some of the transportation services that are now available is that because we're still new, we're focusing on generalized areas in the downtown population, as well as areas with higher income citizens. And so during our off-peak hours, we're a little bit more flexible. We would be, since we are on wheels, we'll be able to drive to somewhere like, say, for instance, a college. College kids still are medical patients, but if you need a place to medicate while you're studying, or, you know, you just want to kind of have fun, you still will be able to do that on the bus, and you don't have to worry about that 9-to-5 traffic or, you know, that crowd.
All right. Now, the elephant in the room, of course, would be, what does the California Highway Patrol think of this idea?
Well, when we called San Francisco's public health department, they did say that there is currently no law against it. But, you know, it's kind of like Lyft and Uber. It's one of those things that because there is no law, you know, we have to kind of play it by ear. And so we definitely have to, one, get a really good lawyer on our side, and as well as keep an eye on some of the changing laws. But I believe because what we're trying to do is trying to still keep it a discreet service, a lot of the times with public intoxication, it's when, you know, you become a public nuisance that things really, really start to, you know, boil up.
Yeah. You know, I know that there are services that offer like pub crawls where they'll load mm-hmm. a bus up with people that are, they're drinking from bar to bar, but I don't know that they're drinking in the car. Is there law that covers like where you have to be as far as the driver's area versus the passenger area? Does there have to be a wall in between, anything like that?
At the moment, they once again don't have a law for that, or they don't have a law. But what we are planning to doing, because as you know, there is the drivers can get contact high. We are going to build a wall between the main compartment and the drivers. Even the driver has a separate entrance. That way, you know, there's no way how the THC can impair their driving abilities.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And as far as selling this to the public officials, I imagine you could sell this as, you know, public safety is that, hey, at least these people aren't driving their own cars. We're ferrying them from place to place.
Definitely. We are strongly promoting the DUI aspect. Just because, you know, once again, since our members will be able to medicate on board, they inherently aren't behind the wheel. So that is DUI at its best. It's just that, you know, instead of having a commercial where, you know, it creates a fear, we're trying to make it fun. We're trying to make it, because these people honestly are probably going to medicate, but you know, as long as they medicate with us, you know, it entices them to practice safe driving habits, whether they know it or not.
Hmm. We're speaking with Roselda Neufville from High Def Transit. You can find out more at highdeftransit.com. Did I get that right? The right website?
Yes.
Okay. And interesting service, basically Uber for Dubers. You get a ride on this bus system that allows you to medicate on the bus. When do you anticipate or have you already started this service?
No, at the moment we are in our in the fundraising aspect. I am so sorry about that. Let's go ahead and cut that off. But let's see.
Happens to the best of us. It happens.
I am not used to Google wants to always alert me to everything.
There's right. Something very serious happening, whatever it is.
Yeah. All right. So, no, we are currently in the fundraising aspect. We have a campaign called Help Us Exist, where we're actually going out to the community, you know, despite their views on marijuana. We're just asking people, why is it that you exist? Do you exist because you like to help old ladies cross the street, or because you like to play pranks, or is it because you're an activist? That way, we are spreading awareness of high-def transit, but at the same time, we're understanding, you know, this is something bigger. Yes, it's something fun that, you know, you, for the first time ever in California, you can openly medicate on the bus, but, you know, it's, we're seeing exactly what makes you tick.
Right on. Well, you know, Roselda, this is a perfect segue for me because I had an announcement for our audience to let them know that we've been hired to cover the International Cannabis Business Conference that's taking place February 15th and 16th at the Hyatt Regency on the Embarcadero there in San Francisco. So I'm hoping maybe by February we'll get a chance to meet. And if you don't have a bus, maybe we can ad lib one.
No. Oh. Well, I look forward to it. Yes.
Yeah, maybe we can get hit me up after the show. Send me an email again. I'll give you the information for that conference because there'd be a ton of people there and some of those funders that you might want to meet. So that'd be very interesting. I'm a big proponent of getting these businesses started at a local level and with people involved in them that have a foot in the cannabis community rather than just, you know, carpetbaggers with a bunch of money who just see the next big money-making venture. So, Roselda, can you give us a bit of your background? Or how did you come up with this idea and how long have you been a part of the community?
All right. My personal involvement with cannabis, I guess I'm the lucky ones that can say that I started that journey in Amsterdam. Oh. I, you know, the heart. But with High Def Transit, definitely evolved along the way. High Def actually started off as a, it was intended to be indoors in a brick and mortar environment where you can watch movies. And then going to HempCon, with the laws and regulations, once again in San Francisco, you can only operate within 1,000, or you can't operate within 1,000 feet of a school, or, you know, a lot of the times businesses, they tend to complain about it. So it really decreased our, the areas that we can, that we would be able to operate. And after going to HempCon earlier this year, someone recommended that maybe we try it as a delivery service, mainly just because they are still raiding dispensaries in California. Mm-hmm. But upon speaking with some of the other delivery service owners, they advised against it. They said, one, you're a female, and unfortunately, we are in a society where there's guns. So imagine a female comes to your place with a bag of weed, and you know you have, you gotcha. Know you may have the upper hand, and you know it's not a good outcome for at least one of us. So, High Def Transit then evolved into, hey, well, why don't I let certain amount of people or you know crowd that I can, you know, make sure that they're safe and have a good time on a bus. That way, one, because they are working class professionals, it decreases the chances for criminal activities. And two, it opens up this brand new industry. We're providing recreational transportation, and it hasn't been done in California, at least on a daily service the way how I want to.
All right. Well, Roselda, I love the idea, and I wish you all the luck in the world with your crowdfunding and getting the funds raised for this business, because I think it's an important service, and it could go a long way to allaying people's fears about the stone driver. We'll be in touch. Thank you so much for being a part of the show.
Thank you.
All right. Check them out, highdeftransit.com, for more information on that. And that's all the time we got for hour one, but stay tuned. Hour two is next. We got Bacon Dan in the studio, so there's bound to be something interesting going on. Also, we've got our daily Toker tunes for Irie Wednesday, some great music from a French performer, Anna Tijoux, and more discussion of the news of the day, including the failure to indict in the Eric... Excuse me. In the killing of Eric Garner in New York City. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. For everyone here at 420radio.org. Until next time, take care of each other, Tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You're growing, you're giant, you're rolling, you're smoking. You take a seat, you're planning.